Hi everyone, I'm Jason Scorse and welcome to another episode of Dispatch from the Zombie Apocalypse. I hope everybody is doing great. So today's episode, I'm just going to do a quick little wrap up, my take on the results of the midterm elections, which are not completely in yet. So they will be incomplete. And also, you can get a lot of that news and commentary on other sources. So we'll keep this pretty brief. And then I'm going to get into the part two of the Michelle Obama's credo, when they go low, we go high, and really spell out what I think that means for liberals and Democrats going forward. But before we get to that, it is worth a few thoughts on the results of the midterm election. The first to note is obviously a great news that the Democrats got the House of Representatives back. They had a pretty strong showing there. And, you know, with the gerrymandering that the Republicans had put into effect, they really needed to win by a large margin to get the House back. And they met that threshold. And so we will have a Democratic House starting in January. And I think this is going to serve two incredibly important purposes. The first is oversight and investigative powers of the most corrupt and incompetent and evil administration in modern U.S. history. And Adam Schiff will now take over as the head of the Intelligence Committee. He will replace Devin Nunes, who is a straight-out white supremacist traitor. So you can't really get a better flip than that. And Trump and his cronies are going to be in a world of hurt because the real accountability is coming. And so I'll talk a little bit more about that. There is definitely some downside to that in the sense that as Trump and his minions get indicted and get more cornered, they are going to lash out. And so things are going to get quite ugly. But this is what needs to, you know, this is the process we need to go through to hold these wicked actors to account. So the House, pretty good. You know, there's a lot of talk about Nancy Pelosi as Speaker and, you know, and she's an old guard and she's this lightning rod for the right. You know, Trump was saying, he's basically gleeful saying how, you know, trolling the Democrats, saying how they should definitely make sure Nancy Pelosi is the Speaker and that Republicans will help it because obviously he wants nothing more than to have her as the kind of villain for the right wing to focus on. But I want to just say a couple words. I would love to see a younger, more energetic person take over the Speaker's House. I do think, you know, I agree with the optics of Nancy Pelosi, a San Francisco liberal, etc., are not great politically. But I just want to say, A, there's a lot of sexism at work here, right? If Nancy Pelosi was a man, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation. And those of you who dismiss that, I really think you need to take that more seriously because there's just an incredible amount of sexism. She was probably the most accomplished Speaker of the House in the last 30 years. The things she passed, many of which did not become law because they were blocked in the Senate by Republicans and sometimes a couple conservative Democrats as well. But she was incredibly skillful, incredibly consequential. We probably wouldn't have the Affordable Care Act without her. And so I'm not one of these liberals that just bashes her. Again, I would prefer an alternative speaker, but I think if she is the leader, I think she's incredibly smart and tactical. And what I expect to see is them doing some very strategic, progressive initiatives that will then box the Senate in. So if the House passes some pretty progressive tax policy or infrastructure policy or immigration policy, it will force the Republicans to vote no against a lot of that and then show the country that they're the ones really that have the obstructionists. And, you know, I don't see a lot of stuff getting done, but I see the Democrats being quite strategic and showing that they're willing to do good stuff for the American people. So obviously, we'll have to see how that plays out, but I'm feeling pretty hopeful about the House. Senate, obviously not nearly as good a result. Some pretty big disappointments with Beto O'Rourke coming close, but not being able to take out Ted Cruz. That would have been a great victory. But I'm recording this right after the Democrat in Arizona took Jeff Flake's seat, and that was a real surprise. It's the first woman to win the Senate seat in Arizona, which is shocking to me. It's the first Arizona Democratic senator in 30 years. She's, not probably the model liberal that many on the left would like, but she's quite good on many issues. She's also bisexual, which is just interesting that we're getting, I think she's the first bisexual senator ever, and to that just be openly, at the highest levels of power there is awesome. And it shows now we have a Democratic senator in Alabama. We have one in Arizona. We got close in Texas. So this is good news for the future. If we can compete everywhere, even in formerly red states, that's great. We're still waiting on the results for Missouri and also, I think that's Mississippi. And then also in Florida, where Rick Scott is showing what an authoritarian thug he is by trying to suppress the votes and block the a true count of the votes in Florida. And of course, Trump and all the evil minions on Fox News are jumping on this. And I just want to take a moment to point out how evil this is and how dangerous this is, right? So Democrats, vote mostly in urban areas. Those are a lot more votes and it's a lot more of a complex process, and it takes longer to count those votes. This is completely normal. There's nothing wrong with this. There's literally no alleged fraud at all going on in Florida. Rick Scott and his campaign has not filed any formal complaints about actual voter fraud, but they're just whipping up this kind of hysteria with the loony right and all these conspiracy theories. And of course, Trump, the president, in doing a most unpresidential thing, kind of whipping up this frenzy, and it's incredibly dangerous. This is how violence happens. This is how you get, real betrayals of the institutions of governance. And so instead of just saying what a true statesman would say, which is, I'm confident I'm going to win. We have to count all the votes and then see how it plays out. And we'll have our people there to make sure the process is fair and there's no funny business. That's entirely legitimate. They're just whipping up this kind of voter fraud frenzy. And it shows their true colors. Because remember, the Republicans only can win by lying and cheating. They cannot win a majority coalition honestly with, full voter participation. And so their true colors are out in the open again. And the violence that they are promoting is evil. And, the blood is on their hands if things get out of hand. So the last couple points I'll make here is we also had some really great victories in state legislatures and governorships. That's going to be incredibly important for, again, reversing gerrymandering, for some of the census counts that are coming up in 2020. So this was, again, good news. There was also a lot of women elected as Democrats and people of color. There was the first Muslim woman elected, the first Native American woman elected to Congress. This is just incredible stuff. This is hopeful stuff. And this is the type of stuff that shows the inclusive, America, not the white nationalist America, the inclusive America based on shared values, not on skin color. And this is great. And this shows that the Democratic Party is a big tent, inclusive, diverse party, which is great. And again, is exactly what we want to see. I'll do some future episodes talking a little bit more about how problematic stuff is in the Senate, because the Senate really is tilted to white rural constituencies that are becoming more conservative and more nativist, over time. Paul Krugman had a good piece on this. But we'll put that aside and I'll say, I give this an A minus. You know, it was a good victory, a strong victory. You know, the AA plus would have been if we could have taken the Senate and if Beto O'Rourke could have taken out loathsome Ted Cruz. But, you know, it's good. It bodes well for the future. Nothing to get complacent about, nothing to rest on our laurels, but feeling pretty good. So after the break, we'll get into what going high when they go low looks like in practice. Buddy, you're an old man, poor man, pleading with your eyes, gonna make you zombie someday. You got mud on your face, big disgrace, somebody better put your bag into your place. Okay, so let's get into the specifics of really what I think Michelle Obama was getting at and what I believe really characterizes a movement that wants to take the high road. And so the first point I'd make is that we don't lie, right? I think everybody on the left and the Democratic Party needs to take a pretty strong, solemn commitment to being truthful all the time, even if it's tough. And this is hard to do, right? And I don't mean that every issue, every topic that we, you know, have to show off every horrible aspect or trade-off or cost. You know, we don't have to have full disclosure at every moment in the sense that it's always politically, you know, wise to emphasize the good parts of your policy and then to, you know, work out the tough details later on. But I just think we can't lie. The Republicans from Donald Trump on down lie constantly. They lie so much that it's really not even worth parsing their words anymore because it's just a huge bunch of lies. And being truthful seems very basic, but I think we need to step it up a notch. I think the public kind of has this view that all politicians lie, they both do it, even though the asymmetry between Democrats and Republicans, the left and the right, is so great. The way to really make this clear is to just not lie at all. And so to be the party of truthfulness. And I don't think it's that hard because, again, the things that the left and liberals and Democrats want, most of the country wants, and we don't need to be shy about this. We can just be truthful. So that's part one. Part two here is admitting mistakes and admitting errors. That's what high-minded people do, right? Trump is known for never apologizing, attacking people who criticize him. And this is because he's weak, right? He knows that he has to deflect because his substance is so weak and minimal. The left, we don't need that, right? We don't need to do that. We have good substantive values and ideas. And so when we make mistakes, it shows maturity and, you know, treating people like adults to admit that. And so let me make two observations about the Obama year, about mistakes that I think he should have admitted and apologized for. On the foreign policy side, I think the first is creating that red line in Syria where he said, you know, we'll take strong action against Assad if he crosses the red line of using chemical weapons. And then Assad did use chemical weapons and we didn't do anything. Obama fell back kind of on the, well, if Congress wants to vote for it, I'll do it. I think he should have come out and admitted that creating a red line in the sand was bad, that it puts the U.S. in a tough position where our credibility is on the line and it wasn't wise to do. I think that was probably one of his biggest foreign policy mistakes. It made some of the dictators around the world question whether we had the resolve to stick by, you know, our ultimatums. I think a second thing Obama should have admitted was a mistake that on the domestic side was not pushing for harder criminal punishment for the Wall Street executives who, you know, crashed the world economy and who, you know, basically, in effect, robbed the country of trillions of dollars of output and got bailed out. I think Obama should have pushed much harder to get many of those people behind bars. And I think when he didn't, and, you know, which really led to a lot of the anger that in some sense partly fueled Trump's rise, although again, I think much more of it was racial and not based on Wall Street. I think Obama should have admitted that. He should have tried to correct that. And that was a huge error to not go tough on Wall Street after that, you know, the biggest financial crisis since the Great Depression. The last two points I want to make about going high when they go low is that admit when the other side is right. And so I'll make two statements on this. One is on President Bush. President Bush, I think, is probably the worst president in American history. I think he actually is worse than Trump in the sense that the actual policies he did were more destructive to this country. The two wars, the tax cuts for the rich, the torture. Trump is definitely harming institutions, but on policy, I think he hasn't come close to doing the damage that President Bush did. But I will point out that President Bush did two good things. He gave a lot of funding for AIDS treatment in Africa, many, many billions. Some of this was kind of a slush fund for the pharma companies, but putting that aside, he saved millions of lives in Africa by providing funding for AIDS drugs, and I commend him for that. He also made many statements after 9/11 to show that, you know, this wasn't a war against Islam, and he really tried to go out of his way to not demonize, you know, Muslims. And I think, you know, contrast that with Trump and the Republicans these days, and that, you know, that certainly deserves praise. I will even say something positive about Trump to show that, again, I am not partisan in the sense of being tribal and that this is a sports team. I am partisan in the sense that I support strongly people with good ideas and I strongly oppose those with bad ideas. But Trump's getting tough on China, I think, is a good policy. I think the way he is doing it is incoherent and counterproductive, but I do think that, you know, China has been doing a lot of stealing of intellectual property and, you know, manipulating currency for many years. And I think taking a stronger posture against China's, you know, tactics is wise. So I'll give Trump that he identified the problem correctly on that dimension, even if his execution has been horrible. The last point here before the break is I think the Democrats and the left need to get rid of their bad actors quickly. We shouldn't let people who are corrupt and immoral stay in our party. And the first I want to mention is Bill Clinton. Back in the 90s, I thought Bill Clinton should have resigned. Putting aside the fact that I don't think having an extramarital affair is all that bad for a president to do. I mean, it's their own thing. I don't think it really means anything in terms of their policy. What I really thought was horrible about Clinton was his lying. I don't think presidents should be able to get away with lying to the American people to their face and get away with it. And I've never been a fan of Bill Clinton. Again, the only reason I supported Hillary Clinton was because I thought her ideas were better. I thought her ideas were better than many of the other Democratic candidates and certainly, you know, head and shoulders better than President Trump. And so, but I'm not a fan of Clinton and the Clintons, and I think we should absolutely, you know, call them out for their bad actors, particularly Bill, much more than Hillary. More recently, you know, when Al Franken, when it came out that he had, you know, taken those pictures and, you know, kind of that looked a little like sexual kind of, not abuse, but harassment at least. And then there were some pretty credible stories that he had forcibly kissed a couple women. I fully supported getting him out of Congress, basically pushing him out of the Senate. And, you know, a lot of liberals and progressives thought that was a bad idea. I didn't. I think we have to take a pretty strong absolutist zero tolerance policy on this kind of stuff. We need to be the party that, you know, that gets rid of those people and says we don't accept that. And so if the Republican Party wants to be the party of, you know, supporting sexual assaulters and sexual harassment people, if they want to support the Trumps and the Brett Kavanaughs, and that's, you know, they don't care about taking a high moral stand on that, That's their business, but we as Democrats should. So that's part one of my taking the high road, ethic, and I'll come back after the break with a little more on this topic.
We could have us a hard time living the good life.
Okay, so to wrap up this segment here, I'll talk about a couple more issues. The first thing for going high when they go low is to stop the nonsense about bipartisanship. I see this all the time on the left and Democrats about, you know, we should be bipartisan and work across the aisle and all that. And it's not that the sentiment underlying that doesn't have merit, but that's not a good way to frame it. And when the other side are white supremacist lunatics, bipartisanship doesn't really work for the left. So I think a real simple switch here, a real simple way to frame it is say, focus on the ideas and the values and the policies. So I will work with anybody who wants to bring affordable health care to the American people. I will vote and work with anybody who wants to do criminal justice reform. I am open to working with anybody who wants to expand voting rights and address climate change. So keep it more generic. Don't focus on working with Republicans. Put it on Republicans. You know, if you put a bill forth and no Republicans vote for it, and they say, why wasn't it bipartisanship? You say, well, we did this really good thing. Why don't you ask the Republicans why they don't support it, right? I'm willing to work with anybody, but the Republicans don't seem to want affordable health care for people. They don't believe in climate change. So why don't you ask them why they don't get behind things that the American people want? I think that switch of don't fetishize bipartisanship, I think that's a much better stance to take both politically and ethically, because bipartisanship for bipartisanship's sake is morally weak. Right? When the other side are lunatics and racists, you don't want to be bipartisanship, right? You don't want to be bipartisan. The next thing I'll say, and this one should be pretty quick, is we should only really promote highly qualified people for political office, right? We get, you know, criticized as being elitist and all that, but you know what? Nobody, you know, questions elitism when they're on an airplane. Right? We want elite pilots when we're on an airplane. No one questions elitism when we go to the doctor, right? We want elite, awesome doctors when we're getting surgeries or medical treatment. And I don't see why we should weaken those standards for political office. Politics is tough. It's difficult. It's complex. It's sophisticated. The stakes are incredibly high. People's lives are on the line. So we should focus on qualified people, right? Let the Republicans get, you know, the reality TV show star idiots. We should not go down that road. We should not, you know, think that to counter Trump, we need to have our own kind of celebrities, etc. So I just want to be clear that going high means focusing on quality people and not, you know, getting into this attention-grabbing game with the, you know, reality TV show star equivalent of Trump. The final point I'll make, and I think this is more policy-oriented than kind of general, but I think we should emphasize voting rights, voting rights, voting rights, and an end to gerrymandering. This is an incredibly important and winning issue, right? If the Democrats are the party of expanding voting rights, getting rid of corrupt gerrymandering, and making our democracy fairer and transparent, that is just winning. And just to put this in context, in Florida, where, you know, right now the recounts are going to be going on here and it's razor thin margins, more than 65% of people voted to re-enfranchise the 1.4 million felons in Florida who didn't have the right to vote. So think about that. 15% more of the population of Florida voted for that than they did for any individual candidate. Almost two-thirds of Floridians voted for a common sense measure to reinstore voting rights, right? In other places, in Colorado, in Michigan, ballot initiatives passed to restore nonpartisan gerrymandering and voting rights legislation. So this is big winning stuff. Arnold Schwarzenegger, a Republican, is working on these initiatives. So we should be the party, the Democrats and the left, of expanding voting rights and going to nonpartisan districts for Congress and all legislative offices. This is just an incredibly powerful and winning issue. Let the Republicans be on the side of, you know, voter suppression and gerrymandering. This is just a clear win, and it really shows who we are as Democrats and the left, that we want, you know, we believe and have confidence in our ideas. So we want, you know, as much voting as possible, and we want districts drawn fairly, that we don't want to gerrymander in response. We want no gerrymandering. And this really gets to give the public a sense of the values we stand for and who we really are. So when I get back after the break, we'll come to the antidote for today. Okay, so to wrap things up here, the antidote for today is I'm calling on everybody to model this kind of high-minded civic engagement that I am proposing in their own lives everywhere. And so we really need, as you know, to paraphrase Barack Obama, we need to be the change that we want to see. And this probably means less social media. Right? Because social media tends to bring out the worst in all of us. I'm slowly whittling away all my social media accounts. It's already at a very minimal, and I'm nearing complete disengagement from social media because it doesn't promote this type of high-minded civic engagement that I think is necessary. I want to be clear that this doesn't mean holding punches or not speaking forcefully. So calling out the right wing for their racism, their cruelty, their inhumanity is not taking the low road. In fact, I would argue that's taking the high road. Doing it in a strong, forceful manner is what is needed. This does mean, though, that we don't have to do ad hominem attacks. We don't need to hurl personal insults. You know, some of the language I use in this podcast, you know, calling Ted Cruz loathsome or Trump, you know, an idiot or whatever, those are to kind of add a little flourish here. I think they're substantively true, but they're not the type of language that I would put out there, you know, in a public debate or in a, you know, a public forum where I really wanted to showcase what the left and the liberals are. And maybe for that reason, I should even think about minimizing it even more in this podcast. Although I do see this podcast as a kind of way to also vent a little and to really call the right out for the evil that it's doing. But ultimately, again, I think focus on the substance and really keep the ad hominem and the personal insults to an absolute minimum. Because remember, the right wing needs to lie and cheat, and you know, that's their modus operandi, and we don't. So let's continue to show the country what real leadership and a truly inclusive society looks like. If we do that, we will win. That's what the country wants. And I think this midterm elections bodes well for the future. But we got a lot of fight left to do. And this is a long-term game. This is not one election, two elections, three elections. This is decades. And so we really need to situate ourselves in a kind of warrior mentality of taking this strong high road and being consistent for the long term. So with that, everybody, if you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, or Stitcher. Rate it, share it with your family, friends, and colleagues. And with that, have a great rest of the week. Take care.